The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend John Couch, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, January 17th, 2020. 3 weeks, wow, into our 10th year on the Buckmaster Show radio program. 9 full years, and now we're into year number 10.
Live, and counting.
Not counting. Well,
you're racking them up, is what I'm saying.
Dylan Smith with us in studio. You've got 10 years. You got the jump on us here on Buckmaster by about 9 months, something like that.
Journalism math-wise, yeah.
There you go. We're live each weekday, Monday through Friday, which, of course, are the weekdays, right? 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening podcasts available at buckmastershow.com. The podcast is really easy, folks. We've got a great situation there with lots of shows going back pretty much 9 years, archive shows. Just put in the name and the search mode. The topic will get you there. Media partners, shout out to Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thank you for your support pretty much from day one. Thank you, sir.
Indeed, and thank you.
Green Valley News, Saharita Sun have been a big supporter. The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oral Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Friday Focus interview is State House Assistant Minority Leader Dr. Randy Freese. Representative Freese, a Democrat representing the Tucson area up at the state legislature, joining me in studio. We heard from Dylan Smith, the editor and publisher of the online Tucson news service known as TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's also vice president of the Arizona Press Club. He's the immediate past chair of the independent online news publishers. The acronym is Lion Publishers. Also with me in studio, Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, how are you? How was your week so far?
I had a very productive day yesterday going down to Nogales and coming back, and I'm just a little bit wiped out because of that, honestly.
You getting any writing done?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to write about a column a week when it's feasible, but otherwise I'm on this fellowship that's really up to the border.
I know. That was your big news in 2019. The Pulliam family gave you that fellowship. But yeah, it's nice in one way to get it, but now you got to produce.
Yeah, and then there's also the counteracting pull that I want to be writing. I mean, I used to write 3 columns a week, and then I went down to 2, and that was like luxury, you know. And then when you get down to 1 or none, I kind of feel like I get itchy typing fingers.
Well, you'll get over it. Representative Freese, how are you, sir? Hi, Randy.
Good. I'm great, Bill. Thanks for the invite.
Of course, this is a very appropriate week to have you. We had the State of the State. Did the budget get released during just before the noon hour? Have you had a chance to see anything on it?
No, I don't. It's not out yet. I think it's going to come out at 2 o'clock for the press, and then the minority caucus gets a briefing just before or right about the same time from the governor's staff. So I'm waiting for that right now.
Dr. Freese, the marquee item, this thing about prisons, my question for you, and I'm sure you're asking the same question, you've got 4,000 inmates at the Florence facility. Where are they going to go? We had Pima County Supervisor Sharon Bronson on the show yesterday. She was very concerned that Pima County is going to have to absorb a portion, perhaps a good portion, of these state inmates. What's your thinking on this?
Well, I think the Florence prison is the oldest, if not one of the oldest prisons, and choosing one to close down would certainly make sense for one of the older ones. My thought was, the governor indicated some savings here, and my thought was maybe, not that this is the best answer, but maybe some of these prisoners will be distributed into the empty private prison beds that we're paying for. They have contracts, and the contracts the beds are paid for no matter if they're occupied or not. That was my first thought. Certainly, you know, these private prison contracts are something we shouldn't have invested so heavily into in the first place. But if we're paying for empty beds and we could save some money by filling those beds, that might be a reasonable thought. But I'll find out more later this afternoon.
Here's Tim Steller, the Star.
Hello, Dr. Freeze. I read that you referred to this year's State of the State by Governor Ducey as a very, quote, unquote, very Republican speech. And you put that in contrast to his previous State of the State speeches. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you remember, it was 2017, I think, after the 2016 elections, he promised so much for education. His speech was very spend lobby-ish, if you will. And then we came to find out that the actual dollars behind those words were minimal. So it was a very lofty speech about reinvesting in Arizona, and it didn't come to pass. So what I meant by that was he was at least true to his intention in this speech. Years ago, he talked about how he was going to give teachers a raise every year for the next 5 years, but it was only a 0.2% raise. You know, we come to find out. And he actually had me on my feet clapping for these potential reinvestments. And then this year, he came out at least a little bit more true to his intentions in saying, you know, we're not going to raise taxes. We're not, he brought up the spending lobby again. And then, of course, he brought Tucson into light with his referral to the ballot about sanctuary cities.
Yeah. Do you suspect that the budget then is going to reflect, you know, a continued kind of, if not austerity, at least tight spending? Is that what you think is going to happen?
Well, no, I hope not, because we do have a robust rainy day fund. The economy and the revenues, the state revenues, are improving. And I think the new FAC numbers coming out later this month, in fact, maybe next week, are going to show possibly even more revenues available to reinvest in Arizona. I think, we're going to see, as he promised, a tax cut. I would like to ask that we be responsible and, in the face of increased revenues, make significant reinvestments in the state before we start decreasing those revenues with a little bit of economic uncertainty in the future.
Dylan Smith with us here in studio as well.
Senator Freeze, back to real quick the prison question, because I think there's an awful lot to this. Part of this looks, at least at first glance, like the governor and the legislature again pushing costs down to the counties of things that used to be taken care of at the state level, so they can try and shrink up their budget. But there's still a kind of fundamental responsibility there. It may be kind of appeals to people who want to, shrink our prison system and not lock up people, but there are still going to be people who are locked up somewhere. And you kind of alluded to where I'm going with this question. Isn't this a way to sort of potentially bolster private prisons? There's been such a move against them, a kind of unusual coalition of folks on the left, progressives, and plenty of centrist Democrats, and some people on the far right, some Tea Party folks, and nationally, the Koch brothers, all hate private prisons. Is this a way to sort of throw those corporations a bone and keep them in business?
Well, I know. I think, Dylan, you highlight an unusual coalition that develops on this issue. My point is, we have these contracts in place. I would certainly not support renewing or creating any new contracts. But if we are spending dollars on beds that are not occupied, and we are, because that's the way the contracts were written. They weren't written payment based on occupied beds. They were payment based on beds total, whether they're occupied or not. It would be a fiscally responsible effort, in my mind, if we can close a prison and redistribute those prisoners to occupy some of those beds we're paying for anyway. These are questions I don't have answers to yet. But that, I'm looking for, what is the sensible, how did he get to this decision, and what would make sense to me? I don't know. I would certainly oppose any cost shift down to counties and cities and towns. But if we're talking about absorbing these inmates into a system that we're already paying for, and then over time, as these contracts are coming up for renegotiation, hopefully we can diminish our prison population by criminal justice reform in the ensuing years, those things would make some fiscal sense. But I really need more details from the governor's office.
Any idea what percentage of beds in the private prisons are unoccupied? Just, do you have any idea about that?
Yeah, that number is certainly available. I don't have it off the top of my head. I know that's not 100% occupied. Mm-hmm. So there are empty beds. I don't know if there are enough of those beds into contracts throughout the state to absorb the 4,000 prisoners or so that are coming out of Florence. And just an aside, I think Florence itself was surprised to hear him make that comment in the state of the state.
All right, Dr. Freeze, stick around. We're going to have another segment with you. But right now, I want to tell our listeners know where I'm going next, to my favorite bakery, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Tim, could you use some bakery goods right now?
Desperately. In fact, I'm kind of disappointed that they're not hanging around here.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping there might be a Danish Kringle waiting for us here today. Dylan, you probably would go for something, wouldn't you?
You know, right now, instead of a Kringle, amazing as the Kringle is, I think I could really go for a good sandwich.
Yeah, thank you very much. Steve is ready to do it. Chief baker and owner, in fact, they are open right now for lunch, and they've got some beautiful sandwiches with that beautiful rustic bread that they do, the open-face hot turkey. That would be good right now.
As much as I want to ask Randy some more questions, can we just bag the rest of the show and head up there right now? You're making me hungry.
I think that'd be a good idea. No. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, monasdanishbakery.com. Also a link at buckmastershow.com, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. State Representative Randy Freeze sticks around, as does Dylan Smith and Tim Steller. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in studio on our Friday Focus interview. Tim Steller, columnist with the Arizona Daily Star. Dylan Smith, the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. State Representative Dr. Randy Fries, who is the assistant minority leader in the Arizona House of Representatives, with us on the live line from Phoenix, where he is anxiously awaiting, along with a lot of people, to see what the governor's budget is all about. Tim, you asked for folks to make some comments or if they had questions for Dr. Fries. Jeff asked, will the legislature pass legal recreational marijuana, or are they going to wait for a referendum that they have no control over? Dr. Fries, your reply, please.
Well, I think Jeff asked a very important question, and in my view, the responsible thing for this legislature to do is pass a statute legalizing adult use. That way, the legislature has the flexibility to address this industry as it is growing. One of the problems I've seen in other states is rapid growth without regulation, keeping in line with that rapid growth. I think the initiative process is extremely important, but it may not be the best tool for this industry because it really makes it difficult for the legislature to have the flexibility and timely respond to the industry's needs. So, yeah, I think it's totally unresponsible of this legislature not to advance a statute. And I just dropped an adult use bill yesterday hopefully get some feedback on it.
How is your bill different from what might be a ballot initiative that would come up this fall?
My bill is very different in that it allows for a lot more creation of cultivation manufacturing licenses. It also separates cultivation and manufacturing from retail. It does not allow co-location of medical marijuana sale with adult use sale. I think there are some very important reasons to keep that co-location from happening. The adult use sale is limited to 1 ounce. Medical marijuana is 2.5. There is no excise tax on medical marijuana. So, you know, it's important to be able to track this sale. It creates a three-tier system with cultivation retail licensed by DHS, wholesale licensed by DOR, where the excise tax is collected, a stamp, and a sealed package is then placed in the wholesale division, and then the wholesale wholesalers sell to the retailers, and then the retailers will, of course, sell to the consumer. The retailers being liquor stores applying for a recreational or adult use marijuana sale. They have to create a store within a store, if you will, a totally isolated area within the store where the marijuana is displayed and the transaction takes place, and you must be 21 to be able to enter that area. And then there's also going to be the allowed freestanding recreational or adult use marijuana stores as well. Based on the population, the number of retail stores will be about licenses available will be about 500 or 100 licenses a year for the next 5 years get to that eventual 500 limit. But so there are some significant differences. There is also some overlap. The excise tax is 16%, the same, no public use in both the initiative and my bill are sort of highlighted. You know, then there's some other nuances that we are both addressing.
Your seatmate, Pamela Powers Hanley, posts here for our discussion today. Microsoft says electricity costs
too much in Arizona and wants a tax break to help them with the cost. What do you think about that?
I think if Microsoft thinks electricity costs too much, we might want to talk to our average homeowner and also see what they think. You know, clearly, if Microsoft says it costs too much, our homeowner thinks it costs too much, and we should be talking to our utilities about and the Corporation Commission about making sure that it's affordable for everyone and not just Microsoft.
Go ahead, Tim. Tim Steller.
The governor mentioned in the state of the state the idea of widening I-10 to three lanes all the way from Phoenix to Tucson. I guess there isn't that much that isn't three lanes right now, but what are your thoughts on that? Is that like a important idea, a good idea, or should we be thinking some other way about that freeway?
Well, I think if not the only place, one of the few places where it's not three lanes is the Gila River. And the crossing there, that bridge is certainly old. And if we're going to need to invest in making sure it's safe, then we should probably at the same time go ahead and increase its capacity. You know, I think he did highlight the Tucson-Phoenix corridor as being very important, and I do agree we need to make sure that we have easy transportation of not only goods but people back and forth. But I would, as a caveat, say that our reinvestment in infrastructure needs to be statewide. For many years, we have swept HERF, not only state share, but local share. We've been better at giving the local share back, but the state highways need to be addressed throughout the entire state. And one of the Democratic caucus's priorities in the past few years has been reinvesting in infrastructure and getting some of that HERF money paid back to the counties and towns and cities so that they can pay attention to their infrastructure needs. So before I would be willing to again put more money into I-10, I would say, but first we need to make sure that we're reinvesting in the rest of the state. And if that happens at the same time, I think that's a better decision.
Representative Freeze, Dylan Smith has a comment and a question for you.
So we always hear about HERF and road funding when we talk about the legislature. What are some other issues that are on your radar that we haven't brought up yet that you don't think the governor and the majority party are addressing that you think might be possible for the Democrats to come together with some Republicans and get through the legislature?
Well, I mean, I think one of the most important things, Dylan, is, of course, getting our K-12 school funding addressed and those problems meaningfully addressed by reinvestment. And I think that one of the simplest, most cleanest things we could do is restore DAA this year back to what it was before Governor Ducey cut it in his first year of being governor. I think there's a lot of agreement between the Republicans and Democrats in that being a rapid solution of getting money to the classroom. Whether or not that can happen at this time of year, and I alluded to it at the beginning with Tim's question, the governor's state of the state is frequently something that there's a lot of, you know, it sounds like both sides could support a lot of this budget, these ideas. At this time of year, we have a lot of camaraderie and friendliness, and these are good ideas. I think we can find common ground. But unfortunately, the majority has led with the concept of must not pass a budget that requires a Democrat. So when they have only 31 in the House, what happens is the budget becomes less and less bipartisan as they try to get their 31 members all on board, and then they cut things that sounded like they were going to be present in the beginning of the process. Like, if we can keep fully restoring DAA in this budget, we might find ourselves, at least on the education burb, having a lot of bipartisan votes present. But what happens is the process goes through, either the DAA restoration gets cut back greatly or another piece gets added to the education burbs, like expanding ESAs, which would prevent the Democrats from being happy with that burb. So the process is early yet. I'm hopeful that we can get a major hurdle crossed in getting that DAA restored fully this year. That's $135 million this year and about $60-some million next year to get it to accelerate the restoration back to where it should be. We'll see it with the process, how it whittles that away.
School funding, but for capital funding for the school buildings, facilities structures, and all that. That's
the school facilities board?
Yes, yeah. That's just been nothing for years and years, and the schools are falling apart except where they can do a big override or what have you.
Well, yeah, Tim, you bring up a good point. There is another lawsuit out there, the school facilities board defunding, right? It used to be by formula 10 or 12 or so years ago, and then it was not withstood and not funded at all. So it used to get hundreds of millions of dollars a year by formula. And then for a number of years during the recession, it was not withstood and got zero. And then it was repealed completely. So the language for funding the school facilities board was repealed completely. And then in the past few years, as the revenues have been improving and the economy has been better, we've been funding what's called grants, school facilities grants. So schools would apply to the school facilities board saying, my air conditioner is leaking or my roof is leaking or I have a hole in the floor, and then the grants would be dispensed until they ran out. We've been giving a little bit more in the grants, but I think we should go back to the formula. And you brought it up, my marijuana bill proposal, $300 million of the marijuana adult use revenues would go to the school facilities board to get it out of the general fund requirement. So I was trying to solve that problem at least. But yeah, you bring up a good point. The school facilities board needs more money. They build new schools as well as fix the older schools and the problems that are developing.
Why does one of your colleagues in the legislature want to put an armed officer at every polling station? What's that all about?
Yeah, I couldn't answer that question. I haven't seen that. I've been reading through the dropped bills. You know, there's 670-some bills that have been dropped to the date, which is a higher number than most years in the past. But no, I haven't heard about that one yet.
I think it's a Jay Lawrence bill, is it not?
Mm. Is it Jay Lawrence, I believe, yes. Go ahead, Tim.
I don't want to skip this. In the past, you've been talked about as a potential candidate for Congress. I'm not asking whether you'd run right now, and we haven't talked about Ann Kirkpatrick's fall or anything like that, but what has kept you from running in the past, and would you entertain that in the future?
Thanks for bringing that up. I certainly have been asked in the past, as far back as the 2016 election, and the reason I didn't run back then was because I had just gotten elected to the State House, and I felt a commitment to that term, and I also felt like I had a lot to learn, and I felt like that, and I continue to feel that I can contribute more at this level at this present time because of my experience now and because of my presence in minority leadership. I feel like that I'm actually able to contribute more to Arizona and my community by serving in the state. That certainly may change in the near future. I'm running for my last term in the House in 2020, and then we'll see what options I have available after that.
Did you want to weigh in at all, Dr. Fries, on the Ann Kirkpatrick matter?
You know, Ann has my full support. I think, you know, when someone is dealing with a health issue, they need to have the time they require to heal, and I think that's what Ann deserves. She's been a great public servant for many years.
When it came up, I believe, when the House Speaker brought up the fact that there may be a legislative adjournment in 2.5 months, the Republicans applauded, and the Democrats laughed. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it is an election year, and a particularly interesting election year, if I may qualify it that way. So everyone's intent is to wrap up business. The only constitutional requirement we have is to pass a balanced budget. All the other bills can just simply go away if we so choose. So there has been pressure from the majority leadership, assurances that budget's coming very early this year. And that's where, that's where I think the majority of the focus of the length of the session will be is what happens with the budget. So I think that has yet to be seen. I haven't, we're getting the governor's budget today, and I don't know where the House and Senate are in putting, how close they are together in putting a legislative budget together.
And the legislative rainy day fund is about approximately what?
It's just over $1 billion.
Wow.
That's something we did last year. We actually had to change the statute to allow it to be that high. We had to increase it from 7% to 10% of the general fund, I believe, to allow us to get $1 billion in there. That was one of the governor's big pushes for his budget last year. I think having a robust rainy day fund is a very wise idea, especially in our economy is doing well today. but we are in the longest interim between recessions that we've ever had, and we need to be prepared for the next economic downturn. And one tool is to have a robust rainy day fund. Another tool is to reinvest in the state, so that when it comes time to have to cut some programs, you have something to cut. You can't cut when you've got no reinvestment after the last time we cut.
Wow, I can't remember the legislative rainy day fund being that big. It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Right, yes.
All right, Representative Fries, thank you very much. Hope you have a great weekend. Randy, thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Bill. Take care.
Okay, Randy Fries, the House Assistant Minority Leader, with us on the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk with Tim Steller and Dylan Smith right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition. We had our Friday Focus interview with Dr. Randy Fries. Very appropriate, serendipitous to have Dr. Fries reacting to the state of the state. For some reason, I thought Dylan Smith and Tim Steller with me in studio. I was thinking the budget was going to be released late this morning, so I thought Dr. Fries might have had kind of an advance or take a look, but so we don't really know what's in the budget, but this whole thing with prisons, it was kind of interesting, Tim, that Dr. Fries said that even the people, the officials running the prison at Florence, were caught off guard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who knows?
I don't know. I think it's good to at least propose some radical changes and see if they pan out.
And I didn't know, Dylan, they pay for the beds are basically, it's not like if you're running a hotel, the revenue is like beds that are currently filled.
No, it's a...
You're paying for every bed the availability of a bed.
The same thing is true of all the contracts that the federal government has for immigration detention with private operators of detention centers. It's not about how many people are in there. They're not getting paid on that basis. They're getting paid whether there's somebody in there or not. And in fact, some of the contracts at the federal level require someone to be there.
Really?
Actually, it's not getting paid whether they're there or not. It's the federal government commits to having this many people in the facility and then pays for it.
Wow.
Which basically mandates us to keep people detained.
Uh-huh.
It's a kind of a curious way to run a quasi justice system.
No.
Okay, Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick had a really bad fall, I guess. Broke a couple of ribs. There were some problems with her back, right?
Spinal fracture.
Mm-hmm. Which sounds horrible, but there's a very, very wide range as to what a spinal fracture actually is. I mean, that could be a pretty minor crack in your disc. It doesn't necessarily mean you have, a broken back, quote unquote.
Yeah,
although
it's
nothing to trifle with.
No, and those ribs, my gosh.
Very painful.
So every time you take a breath. Oh.
Talked to Ron Barber about it yesterday a bit, and he said, we haven't mentioned that, of course, in announcing this fall, she said that the underlying cause, if I have the phrase correct, was her alcohol dependence, which made it sound like she was drunk and fell.
Yeah.
Now, Ron told me that, and maybe we all know this, but that she was on her way to the Capitol, perhaps in a metro station or near a...
They said the subway. And it's not really clear whether that was actually the metro or the internal congressional subway that runs between the office buildings
could
and
be
the
either,
Capitol.
Yeah. So in any case, she fell. Yeah, it was... we don't know the correct severity, but Ron told me that she was at her rehab facility already, and that tells me that she's at least able to get around somewhat, not needing constant medical care.
Well, from my understanding of how this diagnosis unfolded is that they discovered the more severe back problems after that wasn't an immediate diagnosis, and that's kind of perhaps one of the reasons that this information, which is still kind of incomplete, I would say, was so slow to roll out. At first, they didn't think it was such a serious thing that, she fell down and, hurt her ribs and had a cut on her head. And then they learned it was going to take even more to, get her some physical therapy. And then Kirkpatrick decided to come clean about the other problems she's having with her health.
What's the reaction been?
I mean, I'd say overall, it's been quite sympathetic. The thing that always strikes me in these situations is that probably no adult in the area hasn't had a friend or a family member who's been addicted to some substance or the other, alcohol being the big one. So, I always think these days that people are going to lash out and criticize somebody along partisan divides, but it's been a lot more sympathetic, widely sympathetic with a few exceptions. And, not only that, but kind of applauding Kirkpatrick for doing this. It helps when people acknowledge, it helps other people when a person who's having alcohol problems or other substance abuse problems says it. It gives other people courage, and that's really good. It makes, I think it makes a lot of people kind of take a look at themselves and say, well, wait a minute,
Yeah.
There are plenty of people in the public eye and in politics who, if they're having a dependence problem, try and go to rehab, the very low key, and cover it
up. Sneak away,
And, to her credit, that didn't happen in this instance. People have reacted so much, and maybe it's really down to our headlines, because, you know, for us, the key piece of info was her, you know, acknowledging that she has an alcohol problem. So that was the headline. Yeah. Everywhere, people haven't quite started reacting to the fact that Kirkpatrick is not going to be voting for weeks, if not longer. It's, you know, not like a situation in the Senate where every single vote is potentially a key vote. There are a lot of people who, you know, miss certain votes in the House. On the latest impeachment vote in the House, to forward the articles to the Senate, I think there were 9 people from both sides of the aisle, including another member of the House from Arizona, who did not cast votes on that.
Mm.
Yeah. But how long that's going to take is, I think that will slowly become more of a topic of discussion.
Yeah, they're speaking optimistically about it, but I don't see, you know, and they're trying to encourage the idea that, you know, she's coming back as soon as she can and she'll be running again and all that. That's fine, but I don't see any reason to be so sure. You know, I mean, the injuries themselves, you never know how those are going to heal, especially as one gets older, and I believe she's 69 years old. You know, it can be really tough. And then separately from that, you know, what's more important, your alcohol, taking care of your alcohol dependence problem, or being in office? I mean, that's a big question that she may have to confront. It may not be a decision either way, but it may be. And I would hate for people to kind of act as if it would be that she's definitely coming back, and that, you know, the path should be cleared because she's a person who suffered. I mean, the path shouldn't be cleared for anybody, you know.
Right.
Tom O'Halloran has challengers on the Democratic side. Raul Grijalva doesn't, but, you know, it's an elected position, and I would hate to see people punish her for acknowledging this, but on the other hand, you know, it's a free country,
and the election still seems like quite a ways off.
Yeah,
but the window for someone to have a serious candidacy for Congress is much more near term than
closing.
That.
Yes. What about Senator McSally calling a? and I know there are some people who are going to dispute this, but a highly respected congressional reporter, a liberal hack.
This was, I mean, very readily apparent that it was planned. You know, she repeated her line twice to make sure it got caught by not just the reporter himself filming the encounter, but her staff or somebody else. I mean, she posted separate video of this very, very quickly. Within an hour, they had launched a website, registered, and got a website moving, you know,
to fundraise of this incident.
You know, this is, you know, pretty transparently a move to get some viral attention and cause some controversy and raise some money. And they were, you know, right out of the gate selling T-shirts and, you know, trying to capitalize on this.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are perhaps some inferences that can be drawn from how the McSally camp thinks their race is going.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I agree that it was planned. She's like that. She can have outbursts. I wouldn't discount the idea that it was planned. Certainly, they tried to take advantage of it.
But she's had other outbursts and things that, you know, caught on that they didn't immediately launch a website over.
Sure, but I think the key thing to remember about this is, two things. One, the question asked was how she plans to vote on whether to allow witnesses to testify in the impeachment trial. That is just a completely not only legitimate and valid, but important question.
Of course.
There's nothing inflammatory
about
wanting to know whether she's in favor of that or not.
Why not take a moment and respond to it?
Or if you don't know the answer, walk past.
Say, I haven't made up my mind yet.
Yeah, sure.
Which would be, you know, disingenuous response, but still one that...
That's ridiculous.
You got to take it, right?
The other thing that strikes me about it is that maybe it shows she feels like she's vulnerable still from the right wing of her party, because that's the only people who this appeals to.
Sure.
I mean, independents and Democrats aren't going to like this. Not even all Republicans are going to like this, although maybe the majority would. So if she planned it, then definitely she's trying to appeal to a real core audience.
Well, even if she didn't plan it, you know,
they're not trying to capitalize on it. No, and capitalize, you know, she was $2 million short of Mark Kelly's haul for the last quarter, correct?
Yeah, something that right.
Yeah, so no wonder, you know. But the funny thing is, she went on Laura Ingraham's show last night to brag about this, and then Ingraham tried to get her to answer
the question.
The question, and she still didn't answer it. So that's the real problem.
So is Laura Ingraham a liberal hacker?
Yeah, apparently so. Right, by that definition,
somebody should send her a T-shirt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, certainly it solidifies her position in the primary slightly because it appeals to that feeling of wanting to own the libs, so to speak. But that doesn't help her. You know, this is like the treason attack in the general election. It doesn't help her with the general electorate. And it's just kind of petty.
So speaking of T-shirts, your now former colleague Joe Ferguson said he's going to print up some liberal hack T-shirts.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I'm sure. Yeah, he liked, entertained a lot. I gave him a button along those lines a while ago.
Okay, Tim. Have you put together, you were saying earlier that you're only down to one column, right?
Yeah, I've been writing just for Sundays. And even then, I'm skipping some because I'm on this fellowship where I'm traveling all over.
Right.
And just really overwhelmed, frankly.
Does that mean there will be no column of yours?
I have some ideas in the back of my mind, but I'm not sure they're going to come to fruition.
I think we'll probably find you over at Rincon Market having a cup of coffee and some lunch and trying to figure out
feverishly typing away
what you're going to write about.
Oh, well, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about both of these things that we just talked about. And I don't know if the whole story has been told. It certainly hasn't yet.
Okay. Dylan, what about you?
We've got a couple things that we are digging into and not really ready to unveil them yet. It kind of depends on how quickly we get some more serious answers to things about how soon those will be published.
Okay.
So stay tuned in that respect. If I can plug, next week is the 10th anniversary of TucsonSentinel.com beginning publishing full time. And so we've managed to stick this out for a decade.
Wow.
Thanks to the support of this community. And we are really very, very grateful for it.
Congratulations.
Okay. Congratulations. Thank you very much. Hope you both have a great weekend. All right, Dan Gibson filling in for Matt Russell as Weekend Watch right after this.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster, and you know how I love to travel. I've always searched for that new destination or travel experience that makes life so special. And I looked to Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel for insight on current travel trends.
This is Ryan Hansen, and I'd like to personally invite your listeners to the Bon Voyage Travel Showcase. Over 40 travel partners will be on hand to answer all the individual travel questions that you have. Bill, you and I are going to team up for a joint presentation to help your listeners discover all the world has to offer.
I'm looking forward to it, Ryan, talking about the inspiration behind my lifetime of travel to more than 100 countries.
Join us on February 16th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Hilton El Conquistador for Bon Voyage's free travel showcase.
And look no further. The folks at Bon Voyage will help you plan that perfect journey.
Be sure to visit bvtravel.com to RSVP.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
All right, time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive. Hey, fun road trip, southwest portion of New Mexico. Pretty area of the land of enchantment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the listing of some great places to stay and all sorts of ideas about what to do in Silver City. And if you like chocolate, like I like chocolate, Chocolate Fantastasia, coming up on February 8th in Silver City, again, southwestnewmexico.org. The regular host of our Weekend Watch, Mr. Matt Russell, off attending a wedding in the Tampa area, saw some beautiful pictures from his trip down there, but always a pleasure to welcome Dan Gibson from Visit Tucson. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going? The regular host of the segment, me, Matt to take his backup duties off.
It's getting there, isn't it? It's getting close. I mean, you're going to be neck and neck with Matt here.
Who's my getting co-host, more, Matt Russell.
Yeah, who's getting more airtime for Weekend Watch? Anyway, it's a great weekend. Got some lots going on. Hit it.
It's wild. There's too much. It's almost exhausting.
There you go.
So we've been working Visit Tucson here with some Mexican brewers and the people at Borderlands, and they're releasing, I don't know if you knew, there's a female head brewer at Borderlands, female head brewer at some of these breweries in Mexico. So they did a collaborative beer celebrating women in beer. It's called
really?
Las Hermanas, yes. It's launching today at Borderlands Brewing on Tool at 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. There will be the brewers from Mexico there, from Cerveza Rey, will be there. These brewers work together. It's a delicious beer, and it'll be available today. And you can try this transnational collaboration.
Very cool.
Celebration.
What about the festival I heard about?
I'm ready for you. That was coming up next.
All right.
Tucson Japanese Festival, oddly enough, at the Tucson Chinese Cultural Center, which is another transnational collaboration there. That's at 1288 West River Road. That's happening Saturday, January 18th from 11 to 3. There will be taiko drums and martial arts and those little ball things made out of octopus and folk dance and calligraphy and kimonos.
Whoa.
And origami. It's all of the things. It's free for kids 5 and under, $5 per person. They ask that you bring cash, help them out there, so you don't have to pay those pesky credit card fees.
Give me another one. You give me number 3 for the Weekend Watch.
You know what? It's hard to overlook this one. It's Dillinger Days at Hotel
Conrad. Oh, yes, sir.
One of Tucson's, I think, one of the more signature events, reenactments happening. There's the Speakeasy on Saturday, which is whiskey tastings, appetizers, live entertainment. That's happening at 6 p.m. at Hotel Congress. Sunday is the reenactment. That's for all ages. Annual spectacle with retro cars and clothing and all this stuff, and gunfire and, you know, all the fun things you associate with Dillinger Days. And then Monday, the party does not end. Then it's the Downtown Jazz Fiesta, which is sort of an extension, a little bit of Dillinger Days. Tule Avenue, our 5th Street will be closed down from Congress to Tule. Two stages of music there on the street, plus music in Hotel Congress and on the Maynard's patio. All of that is free. Headliners Yolo County Line is the closing of the Tucson Jazz Festival. So that's something to look forward to as well.
We will look forward to it. Matt Russell, Matt/Dan Gibson, thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Always happy to host this segment for you.
Thank you very much. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of our program. On behalf of John Couch, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great weekend.